Podcast. Welcome to the Queer Arabs Podcast. This is Alia.
And Ellie.
And we are the Queer Arabs. I am Saudi and a lesbian.
I am a bi-trans Lebanese person living in America.
Yes. And I'm living in America too. Obviously, we're sitting next to each other. So we are here with our very good friend, Kashgar. Hey, how's it going?
Going well, thank you.
Thank you so much for being on this.
I'm really excited.
Me too. So we invited Kashgar here today because she has a very cool story, very unique. And we think that, you know, some people will be able to identify and some people will be able to learn from it as well.
Why the fuck are you here, Kashgar?
Well, I don't really fucking know, actually. First of all, thank you so much for inviting me. And that's probably why the fuck I'm here, because y'all are amazing people. And it's also great to, I guess, be able to share in a somewhat protective, safe space personal stories that maybe other people might think is weird. And I'm sure a lot of listeners might think this is completely whacked, whatever I'm about to say.
We are all about the weird on this show.
Oh, it's in the title, Queer.
Queer. Welcome to the Queered Arab.
I was going podcast. More for the classical
Oh, I see. Like, that's queer.
Oh, duh. Okay.
Duh. Yeah. What the hell?
We are idiots.
Okay, but definitely cut that out.
Or leave it. Just kidding. Anyway, so tell Ellie us why the hell are you here, Kashgar?
Well, I'll talk about how I became Muslim, and it's something I'm very self-conscious about because of the words that I do associate with things like convert specifically, and it's kind of complicated, so forgive me if my thoughts are rather scattered.
Yeah. No, I'm scattered. Sometimes like just talking stuff out even in a scattered way, it's like you hear a lot of truth from someone.
Besides, if people want like super smooth, super awesome interviews where there's like no editing mistakes and no cursing, they can go like listen to Charlie Rose or some shit like that.
So when did you start learning about Islam?
I became interested in Islam because of my family heritage, actually. My mom is Anglo-Saxon American and her family has been here for several generations, and they're from what is now called the Czech Republic. I was about to say Czechoslovakia. That's so 2000 and late. So, but
2000 and late.
Actually, a little later. Earlier. Now, earlier. A little earlier, of course. And then on my dad's side of the family, a lot of things are very ambiguous. His family is from the Balkans, and is cray in the Balkans.
Tell us more.
Well, my dad's mom was born in a town in Turkey, and my dad's father, my grandpa, I refer to them this way because I haven't ever met them in person. Mm-hmm. They both passed away before I was born, so I feel kind of a disconnect, like my dad's dad, not necessarily my grandpa.
Yeah.
But my grandpa was born in Albania, actually, in a city that kind of borders on with Greece. Mm-hmm. So we think he's ethnic Greek, and then my dad's mom, we're not sure.
Yeah.
I mean, she definitely spoke Greek, but I think she had a very strong Turkish background, and we don't even know about my dad's own father, because he also spoke Turkish fluently.
Yeah.
He didn't even go to Greece when he had the opportunity to immigrate or to cross the border at what the time would have been the Ottoman Empire, so actually he wouldn't have been crossing anything. He didn't go to Athens,
though.
He went to Istanbul instead.
Oh, interesting.
So it's kind of intriguing that someone who we think is ethnic Greek, he instead moved his whole family to Istanbul, and they live there for a while, actually.
Oh, that's fascinating. So you didn't grow up Muslim?
No, I didn't. But the reason I first heard about Islam, actually, in a more intimate way, when I learned that part of my dad's family was from Turkey. And so I just looked up, you know, Turkey. I wanted to know more about it. And, of course, one of the basic facts that popped up about this country was that it is a Muslim country. And then the Ottoman legacy of this, for example, why Bosnia is a Muslim Balkan country.
Yeah.
So that was really intriguing, and it was mainly academic at first, but as I learned more, it became something deeper. And for some reason I still don't understand, Islam did resonate with me on a really personal level, and it felt like a stronger connection to what it might be, kind of a more hidden history on my dad's side. Because I've been to Greece several times. I speak, kind of shitty Greek, but, you know, I'm not going to die in Greece. It's enough to get around,
right?
So, and I can read it too. So, I mean, it's basically good enough. But with Turkey in the Ottoman Empire, I never had such a real attachment. So Islam is kind of a way of bridging that gap, that generational gap. And it also, although a lot of questions remain unanswered on my dad's side of the family, for some reason, Islam in a way feels kind of like part of a home. It's really weird to describe. And it doesn't even make sense to me, quite honestly.
Yeah. I guess it's hard to put that feeling into words.
Yeah.
A feeling like that. How old were you when you started learning about Islam?
I was in high school, and actually in freshman year and sophomore year, I did consider myself to be atheist because of all the bad things that organized religion has done. And it's not even necessarily the religion itself, but it's the things that have been done in the name of religions. And I see religions more as neutral, you know, things are just text. But when people breathe life into that by how they practice these religions, they determine whether they are going to hurt others or whether they're going to spread goodness and be kind people and how, you know, strengthen their attachment with whatever they believe in. It's up to the individual. But so much bad has been done in the name of religions, right? Mm-hmm. So it definitely turned me off in like near the end of middle school and then into high school. And I'm like, oh, I don't like any of it. You know, I kind of became more of a Bill Maher atheist, actually. Uh-huh. But then when I rethought things, especially with the family heritage factored in, I kind of rethought my spiritual stance on it. And I still don't know at the end of the day whether God exists or not. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm more agnostic, I guess, but at the same time, I do feel Muslim for sure.
Yeah. So I would almost call it like culturally Islamic?
Perhaps, and I feel timid to use that word because I feel like I'm perhaps appropriating, you know, culture in a way because I didn't grow up Muslim. It probably was my great-grandparents who were Muslim and, you know, it's just weird. I'm not sure how I feel about taking that term on just because of people who do grow up culturally Muslim. And I grew up kind of more secular with a lot of Catholic influence from my mom.
Yeah, and then on the flip side, it's like, what does that even mean, culturally?
That's true.
Muslim? Because, I mean, Islam spreads among, you know, it's spread out among so many different countries, cultures, people. There's no one culture that has a monopoly on Islam.
Absolutely. Religions are for everyone. It's not a single race that's Christian or a single race that's Muslim, despite what people think. They associate Arab as automatically as being Muslim, tying these two identities like they're synonyms, when in reality, only 20% of the Muslim world is Arab. So that's also interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So many people make that. I don't know what it is. Like, still, when there's so much information readily available, people still kind of equate Muslim with Arab or vice versa. And I know a lot of it is because of the propaganda by like the powerful countries like Saudi Arabia. But at the same time, it's like, you know, we all have access to information. We all need to realize just how diverse of a population, the Islamic population in the world is.
Also, I think, you know, with Arabs who are Christian as well and other faith, whether it's Yazidi, you know, outside the Abrahamic faith, it also does them kind of an injustice to assume some sort of a Muslim monolith on an entire group that is Arab.
Absolutely.
And what even is being Arab, actually? What is even being Asian? These terms are pretty recent, actually.
They're very simplistic to describe such a complex history. So
I kind of feel they were almost imposed on, like, the Middle East just, you know, by outside powers, you know, like the colonizing powers of England, France, and everyone else.
Right.
And more recently, the Americas, because, you know, how often do you, up until the second Iraq invasion, how often did, like, Americans really distinguish between, like, Arab groups? Like, seriously, what politician, like, what serious, what, I don't want to say, what non-foreign policy politician, like, knew what occurred was? So.
Yeah. Oh, man.
And we're back to heavy topics.
Yeah. Always gets heavy and complicated, because that's the nature of the game.
But, you know, this whole conversation started with the fall of the Ottoman Empire, and where her grandfather, you know, landed.
And it makes
We started very heavy right away.
And I realized my dad is quite old, knowing that I'm, you know, only having one generation separating myself from the Ottoman Empire. Like, holy shit, Dad, you're old.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, it's weird. It is weird.
Bizarre realization.
Yeah.
Oh my god,
it's kind of existentially inducing in a way.
Yeah.
Like, here's this, because when I hear Ottoman Empire, especially when I was first learning about it, I thought of something that was an old relic sitting in some, you know, attic upstairs. But in reality, it's, you know, it's very recent.
Recent history.
Sadly, the same can be said about something like slavery. It's not that far away
from
our country, so.
It's still just yesterday.
Our country does have this really bad habit of assuming 100 years is a very long time.
True. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, the U.S. is so young that, like, people don't have the same concept of what's a long time as in maybe older nations.
Yeah, like when societies. We visited Ireland, we were like, oh, hey, this church is 500 years old.
Yeah, and they're like, that's pretty young church. It's 500 years old. And we're like,
I love your accent.
That was horrible. So, yeah, did you tell your parents right away when you started exploring?
Actually, it was more of a long phase. Mm-hmm. I never, ever explicitly said, hello, mom and dad, I am Muslim. Peace out. It was just a thing that generally became understood when I started participating and, you know, when I started fasting for Ramadan. Uh-huh. And then I also, you know, would start offering salat more regularly, or I should say prayer, maybe because I know that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, when I would start offering prayer more, like, maybe daily. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of eased them into it. And I wasn't afraid that they would be upset, because they weren't. My dad said, oh, I don't give a shit. Whatever makes you happy, do it. Who cares? And then my mom was a little bit apprehensive because she grew up in a small town in the northern part of the U.S., so she wasn't really exposed to a lot of, I guess, multiculturalism or other faith besides Catholicism growing up. But she, I mean, despite her initial apprehension, she came around, and I really appreciate her open-mindedness, because I know other people have a very difficult time talking with their parents. My dad is actually atheist. Like, the older he got, he became super atheist. And so it's just a conglomeration of being an interracial in a multicultural family. And I'm from China, actually. I'm adopted. So we're just a giant pot of random stuff.
So, yeah, for those of you who missed it, adopted from China, raised by one white parent, one Albanian descended parent.
Oh, he would get so mad, because you know how Greeks and Albanians are.
He's
happy claiming Greek and Turkish ancestry, but my dad's not too pleased about claiming Albanian, because actually I just found out that my last name, it might be an ethnic Albanian name.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, I found out.
How did he react?
Oh, well, when I told him, he said, no, it's not Albanian. We're Greek.
Denial.
We're Greek with Turkish ancestry and a connection to the Ottoman Empire, which was, you know, an impressive, you know, empire in the world. But she's like, Albania? No way. So I think I have some more convincing to do. So my dad was actually born in the U.S., but he still has that kind of Balkan rivalry, I guess, to some degree.
Yeah, I guess it sticks with the generations, through the generations for a while.
Yeah, he said no one cares about Albania, which is terrible, because Greece is pretty random too, actually, when you think about it.
Yeah.
Like, people who speak Greek, who speaks Greek? Cyprus.
True,
maybe some in Macedonia. In Greek, it's called Macedonia. Oh, and then, and of course, in Greece. So that's also a random language in a random country.
True.
So.
Good point.
And, you know, of course, Western civilization historians, just because the origins of Western civilization. Mm-hmm. But, you know.
Despite the fact that there was Arabs who had translated, who had preserved the Greek text so they could, again, be retranslated from Arabic into English or into Western languages.
Yeah.
So, thanks to the Arabs who preserved these texts, or they would have been lost forever. Yet thinking that there's this direct line between Greek democracy and, you know, trying to, I guess, assimilate Greece into the idea of white Western Europe, that's just not true or accurate.
Well, it is what happens when an empire does fragment. You know, there's lots of crazy shit everywhere. You know, we also have, like, That's pretty much happened, like, every major empire, like Roman Empire. They've got, like, ruins everywhere. Like, I know in Lebanon they've got, like, a whole bunch of those. So yeah, whenever empires fall apart, they leave shit all over the place.
They do. And then people like to forget histories that are rather unpleasant.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess especially with the formation of nationalism when the Ottoman Empire fell, and the forced identity of Turkishness coming together, the concept of that wasn't even a concept in the Ottoman Empire, but to forge this Turkish identity, leaving others out based on religion. Turks who were religiously Christian go to Greece. Greeks who were actually, I guess, ethnic Greeks who were Muslim go to Turkey. because nationality at the time started to be tied directly to religion.
To religion.
And then there was this huge population exchange in the 1920s.
Wow.
And then we go on to have the Armenian Massacre.
Yay, but we can't say that in Turkey because you know what happens. They have all those records locked in Istanbul, I guess, in the archives.
Yeah.
That's not a genocide. Shh.
Right. Even though, yeah, it's like, let's try for a while to fudge the numbers.
Look, there aren't any Armenians left anyway. You know, who cares? They're dead. Says the woman who is actually directly descended from Armenians.
Yeah.
A lot of painful history.
Oh, heaviness again. Yet again. We're good at that. So, yeah.
Our uncomfortable history.
Yes, exactly. Every country has it. And that's the thing that people, I hope, could understand, that every country, every nation has a difficult part of the past. So it's better to confront it and also not act like your nation has no, you know, heavy parts or wrongdoings, because everyone's done something. Yeah.
It's important to learn and acknowledge what, you know, all aspects.
Yeah, reconciliation would be nice, and getting over nationalism, religions. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got it. It's what we're still hashing out, nationalism and shit from the 1920s.
God.
Of course, we're also still arguing about the Civil War, or as they call it out here, the war between the states.
Or the War of Northern Aggression.
Depends how Southern you want to be.
That's pretty Southern. Yeah, that's example was pretty Southern.
Oh, boy. Well, yeah, like, so when you started fasting and praying, did your parents start asking you questions?
Actually not really, which is interesting. They just didn't give a shit. Especially my dad. He said, you know, if it makes you happy, then do it. And then I thoroughly did discuss with my mom, you know, what my spiritual connection was to Islam. Because I think she was kind of concerned that, you know, I hate to say it, but frankly, she thought, what if you come across some weird radical stuff?
Yeah.
And the stuff I was reading, like, nothing to do with it. It was more historical, in the historical context of Turkey and blah, blah, blah. But she was kind of worried about that. So I took out a bunch of books, and I showed them to her. Mm-hmm. And so I can list some. One was by Irshad Manji, who's a lesbian Muslim journalist. And she's also a leader in the kind of queer community. Mm-hmm. So, and she wrote one called Allah, Liberty, and Love. And that was one of the first books I read, too, when I got more into the spiritual side of Islam, aside from, like, this academic interest.
Yeah.
And it was a really amazing book to
I'll have to read that.
And then knowing that that there was a space in Islam for people who are queer, identifying, and, I don't know, just acceptance and, you know, valuing a personal attachment to Allah, but at the same time not, you know, judging others the way that a lot of organized, not just Islam, but a lot of ways how organized religions can be such assholes, quite frankly.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Because that's why I became atheist. You know, I wasn't even raised in a religion, but I guess I associated with Catholicism.
Yeah.
But then when I really thought about it, I thought, you know, religions are so judgmental. Mm-hmm. Why the hell am I even, what am I doing? And then I end up being Muslim, so... It's really complicated. I still haven't worked it all out.
It's hard. It's hard to separate sometimes, like, a religion from the interpretations that people implement, like, people have and implement and show to the world, and then you're like, wait, what parts are actually part of this religion, what parts are, like,
tradition,
just this person being a dick?
Yeah. And I think, let's say religion went away, I think people would find other reasons to be assholes.
Exactly.
So when
perhaps
when I was younger and didn't think things through as much, I would think, well, if religion went away, then most of the problems would go away too. But I realize now that, no, it's not so black and white. Nothing is black and white. Everything is so nuanced. And,
exactly.
You know, people are bad. You know, there are a lot of bad people. They'll find any reason.
Yeah. And as I keep saying to certain people in our lives, you cannot escape history. Even if you just, like, everyone went atheist this moment, you'd still have to contend with, like, everyone who is pissed about who killed who and who stole whose land. And there would be arguments about that. And it's messy. It's messy because we got 5,000 years of messy written history.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I guess speaking of messy, at the same time, I have also another problem, I guess, even calling myself a convert, because I try not to do that, frankly, even though technically I am. It's because I understand that there are so many people who don't feel like Islam resonates with them personally, mm-hmm. and they should have every right to come out and say, well, Islam doesn't work for me. I'm going to be Christian. I'm going to be Jewish. I'm going to, you know, be convert to a pagan religion, or I'm going to be atheist. It doesn't matter. But so many people are like threatened because of this. And here I am sitting here going, well, I think I'm going to be Muslim because of family history and because Islam spiritually resonates with me, while so many people don't have that right. So I feel kind of disingenuous and a little perhaps guilty, like, holy shit, you know, I'm just over here doing what I want while other people are not allowed.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a privilege, you know, it's definitely a privilege.
Yeah, it's really great that you acknowledge that privilege, because I haven't, you know, there are instances where I haven't seen that. I think we can all agree.
Yeah, I know, even though if I declared myself atheist in, say, Lebanon, you know, it wouldn't be recognized. I'd still be dragged to the Christian courts for whatever reasons. Because you know, unless some other sect officially sort of adopts you, I think it is. It's mm-hmm. just you don't get the changeover. You don't get the choice.
Oh, actually, it's the same in Turkey. When you're born, mm-hmm. you know, your parents write in your religion.
Right.
I actually have a Turkish friend. He's atheist. Mm-hmm. And then he said his parents just wrote in, you know, he's Muslim, and he wants to go back to Turkey and change it to atheist. And so he tried to say that, actually, and they said, so you're Christian? And he said, no, I'm atheist. And they're like, what is that? The person that was trying to, I don't remember if he was able to change it or not. But I don't know. Too bad.
That's kind of gutsy.
Yeah, it is.
That he tried.
I don't know about now if he did it because of Erdogan. I don't think that would be possible at the moment. But
okay, so
he
did it a while ago. Yeah. Things weren't as intense about
everything.
Like a decade ago, or even more recently. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. Oh boy. Yeah.
We're gonna have to talk about him someday, like in depth.
Yeah, we definitely should. We should do a segment just on like Turkey.
That would be great.
That would take like a year's worth.
That'd
of
That'd be
that
amazing.
We'd pretty much have to set an arbitrary start date for like amount of history we're allowed to cover. It's like, look, we're not going to cover anything, mm-hmm. you know, before 10 years before the Ottoman Empire mm-hmm. fell. Otherwise, we're just going to be busy.
So I was wondering. So I've heard like the term convert, I've heard the term revert. Do you know anything about like what the difference is, or like why both words keep coming up?
I am familiar with some reasons as to why certain individuals will prefer revert, and I personally am not a big fan of this word. And I'm not, you know, saying others shouldn't use it. It depends on the individual, of course. But the reason I don't really like revert is because the reasoning that I've heard for using this term is the assumption that, you know, all people are truly born Muslim, whether they know it or not, and it's their parents who decide their religion. So when an individual converts to Islam, they are actually reverting to the original state of mankind, which was Islam. And I think that is so, I think it's really presumptuous, and this kind of idea of religious superiority and supremacy, it's very disturbing to me, because whether there is something or nothing at the end of this life, we're all on the same path, you know, different religions, no religion, it's just, you know, let's be good people, do our best, enjoy this life, because we know we have it, and if there's something in the afterlife, and I believe Allah is merciful, Allah Rahman Ar-Rahim, then I don't think faith would matter to a God like that, who is truly merciful, not a vengeful, angry God who hates people because maybe one time in their life they say, God damn it, or, you know, maybe because they're the wrong religion, because a lot of people will totally go to hell if that is the case.
We would be screwed that were the case.
Even within Christianity, Islam, any religion, like sometimes people get so tied up in sectarianism that they think maybe other people of other, even like within the same faith, are going to go to hell. Like if you're Sunni, oh yeah, I'm Sunni, this is the only way to be. Uh-huh. And then deeper within Sunniism, you know, if you're Wahhabi, only Wahhabis will go to, well, they like the term Salafi. Wahhabi's not like really liked. Uh-huh. But anyway, but like Salafi will say, we're only going to heaven and all the other Muslims are doing it wrong.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. It's just hard for me to conceptualize a God who would send the majority of people to hell just because they were the wrong quote-unquote religion. How is it possible to be the wrong faith? Yeah,
within
it just can get so ridiculous. So let's just enjoy life and chill out and be kind. Yeah, you know,
I like that.
Sounds like you're approaching upon secular humanism.
I believe I am, because if you were to ask me how I identify religiously, and I were to be completely honest, I would say I'm an agnostic Muslim for secular and progressive values.
Maybe it's the whole, like, there's like a huge social justice bent to Islam, you know, depending on what how you interpret it. But
absolutely,
like a lot of, but the way I hear it told, and I'm probably completely wrong, is that Islam was, Muhammad founded Islam in response not only to the, of course, word of God and angels telling him to do so, to be the last prophet. However, it was more like a response to the sort of growing mercantile Arab community, like the mercantilism that was sort of, the way I understand it is Islam grew out of a response to the growing mercantile state that was becoming Saudi Arabia. It was, or that would become Saudi Arabia. It was, you know, less about taking care of your tribe and more about amassing wealth and material goods. So while the Christians in the West were, you know, building their religion and, you know, talking about taking care of the poor, you know, the tribal, some of the tribal structure was starting to break down and people weren't being taken care of.
Yes, definitely. And it's also, there were abuses taking place where, you know, young girls, if you were born and you were, you know, you're born and then it turns out to be a girl, then sometimes they would just be left in the desert. So, I mean, I don't want to boil it down to too much simplicity, but Islam did bring in some regulations that would put restrictions on those kinds of abuses at the time, because you have to keep historical context in mind. This is, you know, in the 7th, 8th century of what is now Saudi Arabia. So it's a very different society than what we have today. So when you read the Quran and you see some of these questionable practices that I personally do not think should ever be implemented in this day and age, it's relevant to, the time that they were revealed through Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. So, and that matters. Historical context matters a lot. And sure, there are violent things that are in a lot of religious texts. And at the end of the day, I think reason must triumph over any faith, actually. You have to use rational thinking. Because if you just, think that you can apply standards that were, that, you know, thousands of years ago to today, it's not going to work out so great.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, that's sort of what the whole imams doing interpretations is supposed to be about, right?
Right, absolutely. The tradition of ijtihad. And a lot of, and actually, for example, Irshad Manji talked about that in her book. And I guess, like, more traditionally, it is scholars who are, I guess, more well-versed in traditional Islam and practices and jurisprudence. I can't say that word. But yeah, they are the ones who would start interpreting things and along with the times that they were living. And that was called ijtihad. So it's really interesting. It's complicated.
Yeah. There are some who do criticize Islam, and I hate to make you like the token spokesman of Islam for the moment, but you're here. that feel that Islam does need to undergo its own enlightenment to sort of mellow it out, like on the larger scale. I don't think that's true, but I've heard that criticism.
I've heard that criticism too, and I'm still thinking through that. And I do think that the criticism that Islam is behind, I think it's Orientalist, quite frankly, and I think it's over simplistic. Because if you look at the time before colonial powers came into the region, Islam wasn't having these kinds of issues. You know, Wahhabism didn't even exist. Wahhabi wasn't like a thing at the time. So when, for example, when England came into Saudi Arabia, or, you know, what is now, what was the forming, becoming Saudi Arabia, they, you know, of course they were supporting the family of Abdul Wahhab and the Saud family who were allied. So they saw, you know, the promotion and just, I guess, giving everyone a free pass to do whatever with Wahhabism. Mm-hmm. They saw that as a way in to getting the oil, I believe. And I'm not an expert on this subject, so, you know, please call me out if I'm wrong, and I sincerely apologize if I say anything incorrect, but that's my understanding of it. And then, you know, Saudi money in turn funding this really, you know, literalist interpretation of Islam. It's really, like, screwed up the Muslim world, I think.
Yeah.
Because this kind of stuff was not widespread. Sure, there were extremists, you know, ever since the founding of Islam. There is with every religion. But for it to be so mainstream, well, not it's not even mainstream, but for it to be so, I guess, like, spread out through the world, you'll find it in Indonesia, Malaysia, you know.
Yeah.
Like, wherever,
and that's
right?
Kind
it's
of like
scary.
The public image.
It's disturbing.
That's kind of like the public international image right now of,
and I see
of
the,
Islam.
And I see the problem with, like, extremism, Islam being really tied to geopolitics, actually. And I'm not going to, you know, be a complete, I guess, religious apologist, because I don't believe in that either. There are texts. There are things in the Quran that are violent. So people will either take that out of context, not, you know, factor in historical context. And then sometimes these things are, in fact, just violent. You know, at the end of the day, it's just, you know, weird or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's why rationale must triumph over religion at the end of the day.
Right.
And that this is anonymous, or, you know. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's good to talk through these things, and like I don't know why so many people have a problem with the idea of asking questions about a religion.
Well, it kind of goes against the whole idea that you have faith. But that's also sort of more like an American Christian interpretation of it.
And in Islam, it is very important to seek knowledge. I mean, it is really encouraged in Islam to ask questions and to seek out the answers. And I mean, this is of course ideally
right. You know? But I feel like the folks that we're talking about right now, people who have chosen to interpret Islam in a way that kind of is very black and white, like you said. I feel like asking questions is kind of frowned upon in that context. Like, for people who see things so black and white, like, this is what the text says, this is exactly the way it is, and it's like, it's basically like, you know, don't you dare question any of this. It's right there. No gray area. But it's like,
there's so much gray.
So much has changed.
Especially in the
history.
Sources that they rely on, even. I mean, I think a lot of progressive Muslims like me will get accused of cherry picking. And quite frankly, I admit it, I do cherry pick. And I think everyone to some degree does cherry pick religion. There's no one proper way to be Muslim. There's no one proper way to be Christian or Jewish or whatever.
Yeah.
It's all so complicated, and each person will come to their own conclusion and practice their faith a little differently.
It's
a
very
as
personal,
an individual.
It's so personal.
And that's what I don't get. Person. It's like, it's the relationship between the person and Allah or whatever they believe in. Mm-hmm. Why does it matter to anyone else?
Right.
Like, mind your own business, mind your own faith, you know, instead of, you know, getting in other people's lives. So if we could all let live, it might make things a little better.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm personally, my interpretation of religions has never been a good one. You know, being queer in America, you of course feel constantly attacked by Christians. Since with the whole Arab heritage comes with the standard, oh, poor Palestine. So you're not exactly the biggest fan of the Israeli state and by some extension, Judaism, but Judaism is not Israel. Israel is not Judaism.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, I mean, actually, I studied abroad, and it was in France, and I did come across a lot of people who would say things, or Muslim people specifically, who would say things like, I hate Jews. I've heard that a couple times, unfortunately. So then I would stop and ask them, why do you hate Jews? And they would say, well, it's because of Israel. And then I said, well, there's a difference between the state and the people and the religion. You know, Judaism was long there before Israel became a state. So although Israel is abusive and violating UN, you know, agreements as a state, that doesn't mean it represents Judaism in any way, shape, or form. Yeah. And there are different interpretations of Judaism. All Jews are not Zionists, of course, either.
All Israelis are Zionists either.
Exactly. And a lot of Israelis actually oppose what the state is doing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, just like certain Americans oppose what their state is doing.
If everyone thought we liked Trump, which actually kind of, I think some people abroad might think all of us Americans voted for that asshole.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like the way people might see Israel. It's like, no, not everyone likes Netanyahu. Not everyone likes what the state is doing. Just like we do not like what Trump is doing.
Yeah.
So no one should get painted with a broad brush.
Absolutely. And,
if you'll excuse us, there's a cat we need to pet.
Yeah. We got distracted by a cat. Best distraction ever. So how do you think your relationship with Islam has kind of changed or not over the years?
I think at first it was mainly an academic interest that developed out of my family connection.
Right.
But as I studied it more and felt this kind of interesting and inexplicable spiritual attachment to it, it's definitely become something deeper to me and spiritual. And it's private for me too, which is also why I'm kind of weird in this talk, because I normally don't talk about being Muslim on this level. I talk about it more in terms of it sucks when people are, you know, hate Muslims, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
In terms of like anti-Muslim bias in the U.S.
Yeah.
When it's more of like a, I guess.
Versus like what's
like
in,
personally, what am I as a Muslim?
Within
you know?
You, yeah.
So I feel this is the first time I've done it actually. So I'm sorry for being so scattered.
No, I mean, it's
having not my
like
thoughts.
I said,
my
like
thoughts
I said, that's
aligned.
That's a kind of thing that's very hard to put into words for a lot of people. Like,
it is
because you're trying to describe a feeling,
exactly,
or spirituality. I mean, that's a that's beyond words for a lot of people.
And for, yeah, definitely for me. Yeah. Like, even describing it, I'm like, oh, I don't think people even know what the hell I'm talking about. But it definitely became, basically, it just became something deeper for me. Mm-hmm. And now I feel like I do have a special spiritual relationship with Allah, even though if I am not quite sure of his, her existence, mm-hmm. to be quite frank. I am agnostic. I do admit that. Like, I don't know for sure. Yeah. But I choose to have faith regardless, you know, and mm-hmm. we'll see. We'll see what happens. We're all going to find out, that's for sure. So. Yeah.
Overall, do you see Islam as, I mean, fundamentally, do you see it as a very accepting and loving and forgiving religion that, like, okay,
Islam inclusive to you? No.
Never mind. No, yeah. Because obviously you would. I'm going to cut that out.
Oh, no, you're...
Obviously you would think that, otherwise you wouldn't be.
I mean, personally, as a queer Muslim, I have found a community that is extremely accepting, and I've read, you know, wonderful books, you know, also, I'm like, doing shameless plugs for certain books. That's good. But I really enjoyed Reza Aslan, No God But God, that was great. But also, Amina Wadud is amazing, a queer African-American convert lesbian woman. She's excellent. Ooh. She actually led a mixed gendered prayer in South Africa.
I need a book list from you.
Yeah, too. Amina Wadud is excellent. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Cool.
Her book, The Quran and Women, is really interesting.
Yeah.
Book list will be included at the end of this on the page with the podcast.
Awesome.
So. Yes, I shall send it to you.
Oh, on the website. Yeah, yes. Let's post it on the website.
Yeah. And also another one is The Sinner in Mecca, which was really good. That was a Netflix show too, yeah. Or movie or documentary.
Netflix thing.
Netflix! Netflix and chill.
Yay, Netflix. Hey, Netflix. Sponsorship.
Sponsor us. But don't make us into a show because we don't want to show our faces. So, that's a thing.
Of course, they could always just, you know, like, hire actors, you know.
Get
you
actors to play. Oh, yeah. To play Alia and Ellie. Yeah.
Off-topic tangent.
Yeah.
Oh, Angelina Jolie is Alia? No? Maybe?
Oh god. Alright, moving on. So, yeah, like, I feel like you feel like there's a lot of baggage that comes with the word convert. Like, is there anything else about the word that just, like, is hard for you to reconcile?
I think part of it is because when I hear the word convert, the things I associate with that are, like, I guess blindly following a faith, no matter what religion you convert to.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know, that term, like, I mean that association disturbs me because I feel like I've tried not to do that, you know. And personally, I don't know, it's just maybe my secular upbringing and my mindset, mm-hmm. that I still carry today that just makes me want to, like, scratch myself when someone says, are you a Muslim convert? I just want to run away in the opposite direction, even though I technically am. Although, yeah. Ellie's point was interesting. Perhaps it is a little cultural too, to some degree, but not in the way that people might assume if I were to say that. So if people ask me, a lot of people ask me because of my appearance, I don't fit the I guess, conception, at least in the U.S., of what a Muslim person is. They picture brown, Arab, you know, or from South Asia, mm-hmm. having a beard or, you know, wearing hijab or whatever. I don't fit that, so you can't tell I'm Muslim, I guess, looking at me. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people, they'll ask me, other Muslims at the mosque, they'll say, are you a convert or are you born Muslim? And I'll just answer, I'll say, well, actually, it's kind of complicated. It's a little bit of both, I suppose, culture
personal.
And
it's
convert.
Personal,
but I don't want to get into it because I don't even know how to articulate it, even on here, right. As you can see on this podcast, I can't articulate it properly, so.
We are the best at words.
Yeah.
Good word speaking. Good.
Good. Me good. No.
Me good at words.
Me good at words. Me good at meowing.
Meow. Oh my god, yeah, right? You are so good at meowing.
I had to throw that in there.
It is extremely terrifyingly perfect and on point. It sounds... Like, if I had my face turned, I wouldn't know who is meowing. If it was our cats or you.
It's my secret talent.
Yes.
Because I like to meow. But, like, when people aren't looking, I'll meow in the office, and then sometimes they go, is that a cat? I don't know. I haven't told them that it's me, though, so I think they don't really get what this random meowing is.
Oh, my God. It's a ghost cat.
It's a djinn cat.
Oh, my God. Remember? Oh, my God. The other day, the two, well, not a few weeks ago, we felt like we saw or heard a djinn. Remember
that? Was creepy. That was so creepy. I mean, I don't know. I'm iffy on that kind of stuff. Yeah, Ellie's like, oh my god.
Ellie's
don't.
Like, god, stop.
Like, stop. This is horrible. Why are we even going there?
Oh my gosh, no.
But we I get were creeped out at night. I get scared at
me
night.
Me too.
So.
But we were in the car and we heard a voice. Just we both heard the same thing, just saying, hey. And it felt like it was in the car.
I thought I misheard it until I asked you. I'm like, well, what? Did you hear that?
Yeah, and I was
then
like,
you heard
it sounded like, hey. And I was like, it sounds like it's in the car.
That was so scary.
Oh my god.
I'm still creeped out. Oh, now I don't want to go home and I'll get scared.
Oh god.
Look what you did.
So really sad. And we're recording this at night too.
Oh. Oh my god.
Oh god.
Time to get the Quran and read something from it. Yeah.
Do you believe that djinns are a thing?
I mean, it is in the Quran. So, okay, this is interesting. A lot of people, I mean, this is, I guess, a general idea of what you should believe as a Muslim, no matter what sect you're in, is that things that are in the Quran, it is the word of God directly. And me and some other Muslims, actually quite a few that are out there also in certain Facebook groups, we do think that the Quran is definitely divinely inspired. You know, I believe that things can be divinely inspired, but to be the literal exact word of God, I'm not quite sure on that one. So that's definitely classified as blasphemy. So I'm a little nervous even saying that here, but
anything goes in our podcast, really.
And like, I guess that's why it's, you know, for me, I have no problem saying, well, if that part of the Quran doesn't make sense, then okay, I'm going to say goodbye to that, you know? But if you do believe that, yes, it is the direct word of God, then it's harder to do that. And I'm not saying that it's problematic for people to believe that. You know, it's just personally, I can't conceptualize that idea.
Yeah.
But like, I'm not like saying people are wrong for believe. I mean, right. I don't know. I'm not saying anyone's wrong for believing it is the direct word of God.
No. I just think...
I'm just going to be honest
like,
how I
like
feel.
Like we said earlier, it's so personal. And...
Yeah.
Yeah,
and it's good to talk about because I don't say that in public or even to other Muslim friends. I don't bring that up, actually. It's only in certain like, I don't know, very intimate settings where I will say that and talk about it with other people who also think the same thing.
And the thing
who
is,
are also
yeah,
Muslim.
Like,
I mean,
a lot of people probably do have these questions in their mind and they're afraid to say them.
Yeah, and I have to say, like, maybe people might think, well, you're a convert, so you don't know much. But also, a lot of people that I know personally that are born Muslims from Pakistan, for example, you know, it's just they also are thinking these things, and it's just I don't know, it's just a different interpretation of the faith.
Yeah,
but it's kind of a shame that people see that as putting you outside the fold of Islam,
right?
Because who are they to decide? Are they Allah? You know, that's
exactly.
My question.
Yeah,
and even if they think
that's
it is outside the fold of Islam, why does it matter to them? Like, you know, maybe you don't like what they believe, just move on. As long as you're not hurting others or, you know, causing harm. Eh, it's not my problem.
That's something that infuriates me when people try to judge others, and then you're like, who are you? Who are you to tell me to dictate what you're trying to dictate?
Exactly.
Oh, we have a cat. Oh my god.
She has a mic.
Oh yeah.
Sorry. Oh no.
We
no,
tried.
No, don't leave me.
This cat likes being pet, but
she's
not
so sweet.
So. Yeah.
Cinco will let you pick her up sometimes.
Aww. But it feels real good to talk about these things.
It does. It's nice. It's nice to hear you, like, share. I mean, hear you share something so personal and put a lot of these feelings into words, which I think you did pretty well.
I appreciate it, but I'm sure when I listen to this again, I'll go, oh my god, what the hell?
I know for me, this kind of topic is so difficult for me to articulate verbally, so... I just want to make it clear
that I obviously am not trying to impose my interpretation of Islam on anyone else. I'm just saying that that's how I feel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're given brains for a reason, and I think we're also given free will for a reason.
Mm-hmm. And there's a reason Allah is called Allah Rahman Ar-Rahim. So that's a really important part of Islam.
Yes, yeah. So,
short anything episode
else,
today.
Anything else we want to cover, touch on before we end?
I'm good.
Yeah. Oh, we didn't do the noun game. Okay, pick three nouns. Any three nouns.
Okay, three nouns. Well, cat would have to be number one because I love cats.
Yes.
Number two would be Algeria, because mm-hmm. I'm obsessed with this topic. I was obsessed with it ever since the beginning of college.
Yeah.
And I'm a year out of it, so it's been a five-year relationship with Algeria, the Algerian Revolution for Independence. Tahiya al-Thawra.
That's a long-term relationship. Long live the revolution. That's a commitment. Okay, so Cat, Algeria.
And the third one, I guess, would be community, because that would include friends and family. So cool. Just gets everyone that you love and you know, support you, and you support them. So
like that. Okay. So Cat, so we're gonna ask you three questions based on those nouns. So I'll start with Cat. Do you think you have any of the same traits as a cat?
Oh yeah, for sure. I'm the type that is like, let's hang out, you know, let's have some fun. But once I'm done, okay, meow, don't touch me, get away from me. I'm gonna go to my room and do nothing all day, like on the weekend.
Okay. Algeria. Aside from the revolution, what's your favorite historical period of Algeria?
Aside from the revolution, how is this even possible? Just kidding. I really like actually in 1830, so the French first stepped, well, started they're idiots, but the French started taking over in Algeria in 1830, where they really started pushing their imperialist agenda. And there was an emir called Abdelkader. I actually named my cat after him because I admired him so much. And he was able to unify a lot of the Berber and Arab tribes in the region, which had a lot of interwar fighting. Actually, he was able to unify them on a united front and pose a formidable resistance against the French as they started encroaching into Algerian territory. Oh my gosh. And I think he was able to lead it for about 10 to 15 years before he was finally defeated by the French. And at the end of the day, he was seen as a respectable adversary by the colonial power. And they even gave him honors later in life.
Yeah.
And I admire him because he saved Christians from getting massacred in what is now Syria, actually. So he stood up for, you know, justice in the true sense, not just when it was Muslims, not just when he was affected by French colonialism, but he would stand up for another faith community that he saw as, you know, brothers and sisters. So I think it says a lot about his character.
Can you come back and do an episode just on Algeria?
Oh, I won't shut up. That will be horrible.
I would love that. Seriously, like maybe in a couple months.
I'm so down. Yes.
Okay. That'll be a cool episode.
In a couple months, we're going to have Kashgar just fangirling over Algeria.
Yes! Oh my god!
Yay! All right, Community. Have you ever watched the show Community?
I don't even know what that is.
Oh my gosh, it's so good.
Please enlighten me.
It's so good. It's the show about a bunch of students at a community college. I think it's probably still on Netflix. And it is so funny. It's just like this random group of people thrust together in a study group that was just randomly put together. And then they become really good friends. And it's really good.
It's on Netflix still?
I think so.
Okay,
yeah.
I'm gonna definitely add that to my watch list.
And to me, that's a very, like, the name of the show really, really is it's perfect. Because it's showing, like, an unlikely community that's formed. And it kind of shows, like, there's no one definition for what a community is. Because they become a tight-knit group, even though you would never expect any of that group to actually like befriend each other at the beginning.
I'll have to check that out.
It's really funny, and it's smart, I think.
That kind of connects, honestly, to one of my favorite ayats in the Quran. It's about, you know, talking about how we're made in different tribes for a reason. We weren't all made all the same, you know? Diversity is important, so.
Yeah,
and it's
so
something
true.
To be valued instead of feared and, absolutely. You know. Judging others because of that.
Yeah.
Like, let's embrace diversity, respect our differences, but also understand that we have a lot more similarities than people would like to acknowledge because of distractors like nationalism and religion, for example.
Exactly.
Man, we're really pushing that leftist stance on this show, and I love it. I'm okay with this.
So,
we are completely fair and balanced.
Anyway, thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, well, thank
you. This
was
such a great conversation.
This was really like therapeutic and fun.
It was. It was very fun, and like I learned more about you. And anyone who, I guess, wants to ask Kashgar any questions or give feedback, just send it to us, and we'll pass it on to her. TheQueerArabs@gmail.com, or we have a Facebook page, The Queer Arabs. You can like us.
You can tweet at us.
Yes, you can send us messages and follow our Twitter. The Queer Arabs. And Instagram, The Queer Arabs. I know, we're so original. It all matches. Yeah, when you look for us on any social media, look for a blue picture of some chickpeas formed in the shape of a heart, and you'll know it's us. And it says The Queer Arabs.
Well, thank you so much, y'all. I really appreciate
it. Thank you. Thank you for coming on.
Please enjoy these outtakes.
Welcome to the Queer Arabs podcast. This is Alia.
And Ellie.
And we are the Queer Arabs. I'm Saudi and a lesbian.
I am bi, trans, and Lebanese, but not actually in Lebanon. We are recording out of the United States, for whatever that's worth.
Why? Every time I say I'm Saudi and a lesbian, I say lesbian so weirdly. Anyway, thank you for joining us today. We have our friend here with us. Sorry, this is going to be a giggly episode. We have...
Okay.
Can we start over, please?
Ellie's like, I hate you.
All right, no.
Because the laughing could be all cut out. It's okay. Like, the beginning was good. But
just work it out.
Yeah.
Just work it out. Okay, can we start the intro one more time?
Yeah. Okay, I feel like it's gonna make me laugh.
Why is this so hard?
I don't know. I think we're high or something. We don't know it.
Well, it's coming out on 420.
It is. I think that's seriously. Okay. Maybe.
That's what it's coming out on 420. Okay. Starting over.
Really?
Yeah. All right. Welcome to the Queer Arabs podcast. This is Alia.
And Ellie.
And we are the Queer... I'm just going to leave in the intro.
I think we're the Queer...
Cut out!
Anyway. I don't know why we're being such goofs. What the fuck?
I don't know.
Okay.
Darling.
What?
Try not to think of cats.
Oh, well, there's one right behind you that right. She's looking directly at.
Try not to think about cats.
Oh my god. Okay.
About cats.
I'm starting the intro. Because I don't like how I'm like, every time I say lesbian,
it wasn't weird,
I
though.
Fuck up
It doesn't lesbian. Sound weird though.
Really?
No, it's not. Every time it sounds normal, actually.
Okay.
You're good. I think you're good, but it's up to you.
Let's try one more and we'll choose our favorite. Okay. Welcome to the Queer Arabs podcast. I think I'm laughing because it's so contrived now.
So
I'm just going to leave the original.
Hey.
Oh,
what?
3 subscribers have shown up on Overcast.
Yay!
Oh, so more people are listening in.
Yeah.
That's excellent.
Awesome.
And
okay.
Hopefully from new countries, but
yeah. Oh my god, I hope. All right. So, I'm going to start.
Try not to fuck this up.
I know. I'm going to
think of cats.
I'm going to start the intro one more time. So can you kind of introduce yourself and give sorry, I'll cut that part out. Wait, how do I start this? Sorry. Why did it get so awkward? What should my first question be?